So I heard something today that I think was really, really weird. And it's the first time I've ever heard something like that before. Did you know that when a guy or a man is really, really horny, that it gets to a point that when they pee, sperm also comes out alongside the pee? I feel like I need a man to send me a message to confirm if this is real. You might be asking, how do you know this? I mean, well, it wasn't a first-hand experience. I was at a restaurant and I overheard two guys talking. The guy was talking about how much he missed his girlfriend, and that happened. And I happened to hear it. So I'm wondering, is that actually possible, or is it an illness? I know this was very random. This was a very random thing to be talking about on the podcast. But is it true? Is this happening? Let me know, okay? Hi, readers. Welcome to the Something Bookish podcast. My name is Amin, aka Lip Gloss Mafia, aka the Crazy Book Lady, aka your podcast mistress. Whoop, whoop. I have missed you so much. Oh my God, I have missed you. Yeah, sorry. Oh, no, not sorry. That was straight from my heart. So, like, whatever note you felt in that music I just dropped was from my heart to yours, okay? So if it is piercing your ear, I hope it's also piercing your heart, and you know that that's how much I missed you, okay? All right. I'm sure this is someone's first time listening to the podcast, and they're like, what the fuck is even happening? Maybe you've heard about this podcast from your friend. Well, I'm about to introduce myself, okay? On this podcast, I talk about all things books and reading, from book list to reviews, musings, tips and tricks, and the occasional guest chat. So think of the space as a virtual lounge, yeah, but for bookish people who are very chill and cool and cultured, obviously. So yeah, if this is your first time here, welcome to the dark side. And if this is not your first time listening to the podcast, hey, how you doing? Readers, this is the 65th episode of the Something Bookish podcast, and I'm already anticipating what I'm going to do for the 69th episode. I mean, it just feels like in the Something Bookish fashion, we should do something really sexy, for episode 69. Something for the books. I don't know what it is going to be, but it has to be worthy of the number 69. Yeah. All right. So on this episode, by the way, I should apologize. Today's sound is a little bit wonky, and I mean, by sound, I mean this intro, because I recorded it separately from what is in the main part of the episode. This intro is recorded through a lot of chaos, but I just had to give you an intro to welcome you into the podcast. From the title, you can already see that this is going to be a book chat, and I was talking to the author of No One Dies Yet by Kobe Benben, which I think you're going to enjoy, and it will ginger you to also read the book. I don't want to talk too much because the episode itself, the chat itself, is a bit long. So this is where I leave you and say, let's talk books, shall we? Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome and thank you for coming to talk books with me. Please note that this is a live recording of the Something Bookish podcast. Now, it gives me great joy to introduce this author. Do give a warm welcome to the author of No One Dies Yet, Kobe Benben.
Thanks, Zillow. Thank you for having me, Amin.
At least you'd have waited for me to introduce you.
I'm
Well,
not editing this part out. Yeah, we've started.
Yeah, we've started.
This is the part where I was going to be like, "Hi, Colby, welcome to Lagos, and congratulations on your debut."
Well, thank you, Amin, for inviting me. And thank you for having this debut on your podcast.
You're welcome. All right, so as an active member of the No Spoilers Club, I have to share a disclaimer that, and a warning, just in case you start getting in the zone, that this is going to be a no spoiler. There's going to be no spoilers in this episode, so feel free to enjoy this book, even if to enjoy the episode, even if you haven't read the book. I'd like us to start with a reading to get in the zone.
Okay, I'd like to read from, of course, the first chapter, which is a no spoiler chapter. I feel like one of the reasons why I liked writing the entire thing is that you think you know what might happen, even with the back cover description, but when you read the first chapter, there's a big plot twist that we did not expect that changes the narrative in a certain way.
Pause. I feel like that's a spoiler. You saying there's a plot twist. Can this
Well,
is why I dropped the
I mean,
warning.
it's supposed to make you read and open the first page and just,
Okay.
yeah. So, sample entry for column, chapter zero, written by Kobe on the 13th December 2019, 13 days after the friends arrive. How do you begin a murder story starring a curious foreigner and an opportunistic local without giving away the entire plot? Who died and why? You start with the obvious villain. The friends and I meet during twilight when our craft staggers after long hours of enduring the earth spinning. When inhabitants conditioning themselves for the violent degeneracy of the city's unending nightlife observe preliminary rest. Watch the novel resident on an evening stroll, humming to the rhythm of his footfalls. Oblivious to the crime that stealthily advances from behind and taps him on the shoulder. I am not the obvious villain. I am not the first opportunistic local the friends encounter. Nanas are the hard features often found smoking in a halfway house that police constantly raid for stashes of weed, tramadol, and little schoolgirls who've been tied up and messed up. That ebony skin, yanked over protruding cheekbones and jawline, possesses a mummified aspect that leaves little flesh for other emotions to absorb his perpetually disgusted countenance. He inspires both fear and security, the bodyguard in the movie who kills to protect. His hands are something for conversation too, scarring on the insides of his palms to show that he's done one too many odd jobs. Nothing with insurance, only the promise of quick cash exchanged in the back alley kitchens of fufu chop bars. Elting or any of his companions may have mulled over these textured palms and the hardship greased into them after Nana sieves through the throng at the airport and clasps each of their hands into his own possessively, shakes them, then proceeds to collect their luggage without apologizing for being late. A detail that confirms his Ghanaian-ness. This makes me chuckle, despite the friends' visible irritations, as he recounts the hours spent in the airport worried sick that the first gay escort they trusted would leave them stranded in a country like this. Like this, a phrase so loaded it should be italicized, even if it's expressed in a casual tone that eschews insinuation. That offers no room for regrets or hurried initiatives to touch up their prejudices in my presence. I grin placidly, their tale continues without a hitch. The three exchange curious glances before following Nana out of the airport, giving he looks nothing like those pictures Elting had perused online before sending a friend request. They will discover, per another of my invalid assumptions, that Nana exemplifies the demographic for whom Facebook is for sharing Otabil sermons and hounding job postings. For this reason, men like him on the app wouldn't consider selfies, only studio shot photos that airbrush their scars and struggles into something that resembles innocence, a crime scene wiped clean.
End of excerpt. Thank you.
So without dropping any spoilers, how would you describe your book? If you could use three words, how would you describe this novel?
Suspenseful, informative, hard to predict. That's one word.
Okay.
Hard to predict with high fits, yeah.
I like that you added the informative. It's actually very informative if the person takes their time to go. It's... Let me not drop any spoilers also. So what came first, the story or the title?
Okay, this was not the original. No One Dies Yet was not the original title. Writing this, and this is a funny story. This is a funny inside scoop that Amin gets because it's her podcast. It was initially called Nana. The book was called Nana, named after Nana, the main character, one of the narrators. But it was going into the bookseller announcement. If you know the entire brouhaha behind bookseller announcement, you have to announce the deal and tell everybody that this is a book that's coming out in 3 years. So they were writing the press release, and they sent a press release to bookseller. And I was actually sitting down in my house, like thinking, my house, which is far away from where bookseller operates in London. I actually hate the title Nana because the book has grown so much from Nana. It's no more Nana's story. It's Kobe's story, because first Kobe was just a shadow character, but now he's into the story. So it's no more Nana. So I was like, the one where the phrase of words that were repeated, or the clause that was repeated a lot in this book, was No One Dies Yet. So I immediately called my publisher and told her. I called her, I didn't email her, because this was a matter of urgency. I called her and told her that, hey, we need to change the title. I don't like Nana as a title. I like No One Dies Yet. Oh, but we've already sent a press release. That was my impression of a British accent. I'm sorry. Oh, we've already sent the press release. and then we had to do a bit of like convincing that No One Dies Yet is more of a marketable title than Nana. Because if it was called Nana, you know, Americans will say Nana and think it's about an old woman, like true, an old true, grandma. True. So I was like, I need it to be called No One Dies Yet. Yes.
Okay. How has the response been so far? Because the book now is like four months into the world. How has the response been, especially at home?
It's still a baby. Like, I mean, the response at home is insane. I'm writing a book that's very controversial about issues in Ghana that people, you know, they talk about it in the silences of their drawing rooms, and I'm putting it all out there in a book. So I was a bit scared about what Ghanaians would think about it, but the reception mostly is, oh my God, I've never read a book that is so Ghanaian and so universal at the same time. That people who are not Ghanaian can still read it and enjoy it. Like, part of it is even set in Lagos. We have Wari Pidgin and everything in it. And Diaspora Lagos Pidgin. So people like that text me like, oh my God, Kobe, why were you able to write these things? Well, research. And making sure that I was true to all the cultures I was representing. Because not just a Ghanaian novel, it's a novel set during the Year of Return. So many nationalities come into No One Dies Yet. And I was very particular about representing that.
Okay. So this novel is very niche. It's not something we can call commercial fiction. And there is a plot. It's not one of those vibes. There is a plot. But it's very heavy on prose. So what inspired you to write a novel where the prose is led by the prose? Because it's not what happens in the book. That's actually, I felt like it wasn't the plot that was leading the reader. It was the prose.
The writing, yeah. I've always loved books that are so well written. I tell people that if you're going to give me a book, please give me something that's well written. I don't care the genre, I'll write it. So I'll read it. So as a reader myself, going into my own writing, I knew I had to write good prose or prose that I would read. And I have such high standards. And writing this book gave me like 3 panic attacks because there were so many times I thought my sentences were not sentencing. But I felt like once I got into the groove, it became the novel I wanted to write. And prose was, I wouldn't say it's above plots, they go hand in hand, but it's a voice-driven novel. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the voices are written in the way that I feel like I would want to read it if somebody writes it. So yeah, it was difficult writing a book like this, but I had fun getting into the voices of the characters. Yeah.
And then, well, you mentioned voice-led, and there are three main POVs. No, well, three-ish POVs, because we have Nana, we have Kobe, and then we have the choruses. But it was still giving poetry type prose. It was like, it was in between fiction and poetry. What books were you reading? I know I normally don't like asking this question, but what books were you reading at the time? Not like they influenced your voice, but like the style. Because when people describe the book, this book, they're always saying it's genre breaking, because, you know, buzzwords and stuff. So what books were you reading at the time that inspired this narrative style?
I remember. Okay, I was watching lots of TV shows too.
Okay.
I mean, lots of writers do not admit it, but we watch things a lot, and it seeps into our writing. I was watching How to Get Away with Murder, and then this book became a crime novel. I did not intend it to be a crime novel. I don't even like crime fiction like that.
Yeah, I'm aware.
And all of a sudden, I wrote a crime novel. But I was also reading very good books like Homeland Elegies by Ayad Akhtar, I'm sorry if I'm butchering his name, but I loved it so much. I was reading, you know, my girl, Zadie Smith. I'm an official Zadie. I love Zadie Smith's writing. I know Amin has other things to say about that, but we are going to not go there. I was also reading Petty Nagapa, Maza Menjiste, Shadow King, which was like a beautifully rendered novel on Ethiopian history. So yeah, all these things inspired me. Of course, I didn't realize it at that time. But now that you ask the question, I was reading so many good things that were well written. And one of my favorite books, A Lucky Man by Jamel Brinkley, is a short story collection. I loved every time I was going to write No One Dies Yet, I'll pick it up and I'll just read a short story collection. And his writing would inspire me to go and write.
Hmm.
And Laster, I don't Laster. Tell people this, Laster. But Laster by Raving Leilani. I see the audience faces. Yeah, you love it, you don't love it. But I thought the writing was beautiful. The writing was really beautiful. Thanks for agreeing, audience. So, I mean, thank you for agreeing. So, actually, I read Laster, and I took back my book from my publishers and said, I'm going to rewrite this novel. This can't be my debut. The writing was good in the first draft when Amin read it 3 years ago, but I felt it was patchy. There were parts that were well written and there were others that weren't. So when I read Laster, I was like, nah, this is a woman who sat on her writing. So I would say on my writing too. So yeah, those influenced my writing. Yeah.
I mean, I'm happy you found a way to still add Laster. I feel like this is a part I'm going to have to edit out of this episode. I'm sorry, but there's no Laster free publicity on this podcast. I mean, exactly, because when I did read Laster, the first thing I was like, writers would salivate yes. over this book. But as far as the rest of us readers, it's like, what is going on? Like, why? Anywho, thank God you still did not give us Laster vibes, because we would not have been having this book chat.
Oh, thank you. Thanks.
So, one of my favorite parts of this book was the character development. Even the side characters are memorable. I'm not sure if I asked, but what was the process of creating each character profile?
Do you know what I really want to say? I listened to your podcast on Francesca Ekuyesi, and brought this question up.
Okay.
And it made me realize that is exactly what Butter Honey Pig Bread was. there were two main characters, but no character was left to chance. Mm-hmm. Everybody was neatly, well developed, intimately. You felt like you know this person. You felt like you could walk to a party and know the guy who was trying to.
That was it to me, for instance.
Yeah, you just know it. And I just feel like I wanted to write something like that. Even though you have Kobi and Nana driving the novel with their voices, they are observers. So the characters have to also be as full of life.
Mm.
So it feels like there's no main character in this book. That's what it felt like. Yeah. Reading Francesca Ekuyesi's novel, I felt that too. I love, that's one of my favorite novels too. There was actually a paragraph that inspired Francesca Ekuyesi's writing right in the beginning. When you read that, Elting slapped Kobi's thigh, and then Kobi linked it to the spicy and savory moments of a relationship that has lasted for a very mm-hmm. long time, and he doesn't understand why Vincent is trying to be like that with him. That was exactly something that was inspired by butter honey pig bread. That's what I did. I call it something, honey.
You're always
pig
starting
bread
with
whatever.
Honey butter.
Wow. Well, you know what I like? I like pork. I like meat. Okay. So yeah, the character profiles, I had to sit down and really give them life. I did not exactly sit down and draw them down, but when I was writing them, they reveal themselves to me. Authors say there's a lot, and I used to think it's a lie, but
no,
it's really
I know there are some people who actually have mood boards for each characters.
Then I guess mine was in my mind, because okay. I'd be writing and I'd realize that no, this character is trying to tell me that this is who they are and they are, this is who they aren't. Like, if you read No One Dies Here, you realize that everybody is human, which is what I wanted mm-hmm. to do. Nobody is good, nobody is bad, they are just people, as we all are. So it's like every time I would be trying to write a character that feels less human, something about their lives will reveal themselves to me, and I'll realize that no, this character is fuller that way. They are trying to tell me that I'd rather be this way, this makes me more human. So I didn't have a mood board, but as I was writing the novel, they came to me in their own voices and traits.
So how did you remember all those details? Because there's a lot of people. Yeah. And each of them have like character. Imagine Shingo. So each of them have characteristics that are very, what's the word? Peculiar to them. So how did you remember? Were you like rereading and then you come back, continue writing?
I just remembered, well, that's why I had two panic attacks, right? I do not have a good way of taking down notes. So yeah, things, you could get two panic attacks from that. But it's also the fact that I feel like I met these characters and I could really write them. So Mina, who was one of my favorite characters in the book, before she came to me, I knew who she was in person. I knew her. There was a human representation of Mina, not in my life, but like a distanced person that I had studied, and this was Mina to me. So it's like, yeah, I that's how they came. I did not do the entire, you know, put them down. And
who was the most difficult one to write?
The most difficult character to write was wait, the audience has like who? Yeah, that's a good question. Good. And the most difficult character to write, if I inhaled, it was a difficult question. I think everybody was, or you should pick among the three friends,
mm-hmm.
Elting, Vincent, and Scott, the most difficult character to write was Vincent. Yes. Because Vincent was just,
okay.
He kept revealing himself to me in layers. Like every time I thought I knew him, something about him would change, and then he'd become something different. So he was the difficult character to write, but the narrating voices, there were parts where Nana was difficult to write because I felt like I could not access him. Mm-hmm. There were also parts that Kobi was difficult to write because I felt like he was trying to over me. He was trying to kill me with his sentences. But like, yeah, I would say that Kobi and Vincent were the most challenging people to write. And the women, because I'm a man and I did not want to get the women wrong. So I had to make sure that I wrote believable women that are not, you know, led by a phallus-centric brain. Yeah.
Wow, that's a big word.
That's a big word. I'm a boy of
I don't even
word.
Know what that means. Okay. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I could not butcher women the way men write women. women, okay. And I'm a man, so I had to take into consideration all those sensitivities. Yeah.
Okay, that's fair. So you've mentioned Kobe was trying to take over your life. Seeing as your namesakes with one of the characters in the book, did you not worry that readers might feel this was a little bit autobiographical?
Yeah, that's what I worried about.
Especially as it's a debut.
Yeah. Because, you know. I mean, Kobe came about because I started writing Nana, and towards the middle, I realized I hated this man. I hated him with such a passion. And I was like, I can't make this man the lead of this novel. So I had to invent a character.
But why?
Because I just, it was a writer thing. It was like, this guy, I want somebody else to be the one to compete with him. I could not make Nana the only reigning voice in the novel because his perspective was not even like very reliable too. So I needed to find somebody that could compete with Nana. I looked around me, I couldn't find anyone by myself. This is a very like weird thing to say, but I looked around me, I couldn't find anyone by myself. So I thought I'll write myself into the novel and give myself a bit of like a nicer representation. Like Kobe in the novel likes crime fiction. I don't like crime fiction. He likes to do certain things that I would not do. These are spoilers that I will not I'll not bring in the podcast. But Kobe was a very weird character who is not me at all.
But you just said write yourself into the book.
Yeah, because I wanted to believe him. That's the thing. It's like when I'm writing a character, I want them to have a name of somebody I know so that I can believe that this is a character that exists.
Okay. I mean, that's fair, I guess. I will let that rest.
No, autobiographical. I'm sorry. I know people expect me to say, oh, these things
because happened. Because it's just right there.
Yeah, like, the African-American scheme and all that. But like,
okay. We'll jump on that for now. I feel you mentioned that a lot of readers at home in Ghana really enjoyed the book and found it very authentic. And personally, I feel that's because, I mean, it's very contemporary, but I feel like the addition of folktales added to it. How important was that for you to add folktales into the storytelling? And why did you even do that? Because, I mean, it's not like the book would have been lacking per se. So why was it important for you to add folktales?
It was very important to me that I depicted all that Ghana is in this novel. And that was one of the reasons I had two panic attacks. Then again, yeah. I wanted the essence of Ghana to be represented in this novel. I felt that every time I read a Ghanaian novel, there was just something there that, like, I'm reading about the city, but it does not feel like my city. It does not feel like my place. Like, there's something about the city that's missing in most of them. But then, again, you get to when most of these big Ghanaian novels are written by diaspora writers or writers that are not born and bred in Ghana as I am. So I just wanted the fuller essence of Ghana to come in. That's why I had to bring Kobe and Nana's perspectives too. So Kobe gives us that privileged, upskill perspective of Accra, what white people may not be privy to, what the Western market will not be privy to. Then we also get Nana's narrative where it's what
local man, sir.
White people expect that this is what Africa is. So it was very important to me that every aspect of Ghana was represented in a novel. And up until this day, I get haunted by some of the things that I didn't put in. Oh my God, I could have said this. It will make it more Ghanaian. But then I'm like, yeah, it's already gone to print already.
The next book.
There's so much about Ghana that you can't compress in a novel. And I'm so happy about it. Ghana is small, but still. There's juice.
What's the favorite fruit in Ghana? Is there like
the favorite
fruit? This is random, by the way.
It will probably mango. Mango is a favorite fruit in Ghana. Ghanaians love mango, and I think when it's mango season,
everyone goes wild.
And coconut. Coconut is there because lots of Ghanaians have acid reflux, and coconut helps. That's a tidbit for your audience. Like, everybody, coconut is amazing for acid reflux and any like digestive issue problem. You don't have to go and buy expensive drugs. I don't want to sound like an Ayurvedic, but like, that is it. Coconut is a cure.
Huh.
to most digestive issues and most. That.
Coconut is a fruit now.
It's also like a nut. You could call it anything.
You can, coconut is not a nut. No. Rude. Wow, because water like comes out and like. Please.
Sorry, children.
Yeah. Oh my god, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So I just. This book is very explicit.
Yes.
Yeah. And I just want to ask this as plainly as possible for whenever anyone who is reading the book gets to this part of the book and they're wondering, are we doing bluefin here?
Why? What's bluefin, by the way?
Oh, Ghanaians might not know what bluefin is. Bluefin is porn.
Oh, yeah. Blue film.
Yeah, not film. Blue film.
Blue film. Yeah. Okay, good.
That's how blue it's pronounced. Yeah. And by the way, I do love Nana's, the contrast between Nana and Kobe's perspective towards sex. But why did he have to be this explicit?
But you see, when you even read it 3 years ago, it was not like
he was not, it was not like I was exactly all. I was quite shocked
it was not
when
like,
I read the final product.
I was so happy that I had a publisher that just made me do anything and decided that Kobe should do whatever he wants with this book. I had no censorship. It was just there. I felt like a lot of the times I wanted to write a queer novel that talked about sex in a way that no other queer novel has written sex, like the way we do it, like the way we have it, you know, even heterosex, which I've never had before. It's a it takes a lot of glitches before you can get the right thing. So I needed to go down to the details, the nitty-gritty, that's the word, to represent queer sex the way it is, and just sex in general. I wanted to use the kind of expressions I use when I'm talking to my friends about the sex I had. I just wanted it to be the kind of queer novel that was like, it was explicit, but it was also done in a very literary way. I felt true. Like I wanted it to still be poetry, even though there's like a blue film in it. I wanted the blue film dialogue to be good, which is never the case when you're watching blue film.
I mean, that's not the reason you're watching it.
Need a setup. Oh, they please. Need a build up. Yeah, okay. But I just wanted to write queer sex like that because when I actually think of No One Dies Yet, I think of it as a book that I have never read before. So what is a book I've never? What is in queer fiction that I want to see that I'm not seeing? I want that written. Like, I don't want to write a woe is me character, which is like a media-friendly character. Oh, these people are suffering. Give them their rights. I did not want to write those kind of characters because in my life, those kind of characters never exist. Like, I always feel like people who present themselves as, you know, nice, media, packageable personalities to do things are not fully human. Like, we are not seeing the full spectrum of queer people and queer fiction. Like, and it's not just African queer fiction, please. It's just the entire world. Like, well, the West has gone to a part where they do not have to write fiction to advocate for their rights. Sure. But in Africa, we are still stuck in, you know, the entire, oh, queer people have to be palatable narrative because I want to publish you to push a message that we should help them fight for their rights. You can't write characters like this. Authors may not even be queer, but be writing queer characters because they are allies and they support the cause. That's fine. But I just wanted to write a queer book where the queer people are human beings. That's it. And that was very important to me. The sex had to be the way it is because humans have sex this way.
I mean, you do write it well because I don't think I've read any literary fiction where the sex is written well.
Oh.
No, seriously, because literary fiction, there was this collection, Anonymous Sex. Did you ever hear about that book? But it was a bunch of literary fiction authors and they were supposed to write about like the different
It was a black book.
It was a black
by Garth Greenwell. Styles, I get Garth.
And then
I think is it Garth Greenwell?
I mean, a bunch of authors.
Oh, like he was
so
on
many,
it.
So many.
No, Kink is what I'm talking about.
No. This wasn't Kink. This was Anonymous Sex. And I read it and I was like, there's a reason you people are not in this industry. You people should not be writing about sex. It's almost as if they've not even been inside any intimate
space.
At all. It was very embarrassing. I mean, it's my podcast. How many people are listening to it? So I can say anything I want to say. Hey, that's the beauty of it. Now, maybe one day when I blow and people like pick up this, they pick up this episode like, wow, your earlier episode, you said, until then, we will speak and give the people
and
what they
And on
need
this
to know.
Note, I'm actually also being punished for what I said about authors' books, other authors' books, if
I
we are being honest.
To, I was going to come to that.
Good.
I was going to come to that. Now that, well, you've prompted me now,
yeah.
Might as well just go into it.
I feel like, you know...
Can I even also say that it's very meta of us to be talking about, to be doing a book review... And I feel like Kobe in the book would probably be like, these people are so fucked. What's going on? It just, it's very Inception. It's giving Inception.
It's also the fact that, you know, we are
talking
about a book reviewer in a book.
Yeah.
Who was written by a book reviewer.
Yeah.
So it's now, like, yes.
You might as well just.
Nodi is about. No one dies as Bookstagram. Yeah.
Interview this man. Like,
yes, so yeah.
Relax. Let me die first. Please bury me. All right. Now, for those who would. I'm sure there are a lot of people who are very interested in how you got here, from reviewing books to dropping to writing your own book. Please talk to us about this very strenuous publishing journey, from the idea to how you started querying and how you got yourself an agent.
I'll really be now honest here, yeah, because this is the Sounding Bookish podcast and there are few people in the room. But I came back from Nigeria. Like I came to Nigeria with an amazing business idea that I thought will work, and it took all my money, and I came back to
Nigeria.
Ghana
will do that to you.
Crying, yes. I came back to Ghana crying that I had failed, and like I was looking at all the talents. I mean, I could sell my body, but like the body was not there yet 3 years ago. So I was like, what other things could I do? And everybody told me that Kobe, you're an amazing writer. You should do this. The way you write your Instagram captions, do it like how you review books. This is it. I never consulted anybody that I was writing a novel, by the way, but every time I wrote an Instagram caption about a book review, people would tell me that, oh, you should write your own book. I think you'd make an amazing writer. And I was like, oh, why don't I also write my book? But already, even before that, I'd been trying 7 years to get my books published. Every year, I thought I would be an author before what you guys call NYSC. Yeah.
Wow. Rude.
We call it NSS in Ghana, I think.
Oh, you guys even have your own NYSC.
Yeah, everybody has.
You're not filming as if people are not doing paramilitary.
No, everybody has NYSC in their
okay,
country.
Okay.
So it's like, I thought I'd be a writer before this. So every year I'd write something and I'd submit it to agents. It would never work out. So I just decided that I'm not going to write again. For 3 years, I never wrote. I was going to be serious with my life and just focus on making money by selling books. So yeah, the pandemic came, people stopped buying books, and I was like, nah, I have to make use of this other thing that I know, which is a talent. So the year of return had come, and I was like, oh my God, year of return will make such a good setup for a novel. So I was like, I'm going to write a book about the year of return.
Mm.
And No One Dies Yet came out. When I wrote it, I just knew this is my book that would get published. If it hadn't gotten published, it would have crushed me. I would have been like, I don't know publishing anymore, because this is the stuff you guys eat up. So I wrote it, and in, I think, 4 weeks, I had an agent. In 6 weeks,
four
I had...
4 weeks, you had an agent.
Yeah, you told me to start crying. I was like, yeah, let me go
don't
start
talk
crying.
About me. Like, just, okay, I don't want to hear, like, backstory. Like,
okay, you don't want to hear Amin being part of the backstory. But Amin is, guys. Amin is, like, the person. So, yeah, I went to do my entire querying thing. And 4 weeks, I had an agent. I was not surprised by that. But then you can also get an agent and never get a publisher. Because this book was, you know, very experimental and very, like... difference than what lots of people had read. It was going through submissions. I mean, all the big publishers refused it. And then there was this independent publisher called Europa that said, oh my God, we love The Voice. You only need one person, one, yes, as everybody says. So Europa agreed to publish it. And yeah, we are here now.
How was the editing process like?
Oh, the editing was so...
Because again, my type, I want to add for the record, this is not the book you first gave me that you were publishing.
Yes.
This is a very different book.
Yes.
How did we get from, like, what changed?
I think I got told by my editor plainly that my writing was incantational. It was a word he used that, like, this is not good writing.
Was the person?
He was my editor.
The race.
Yeah, it was white.
Okay.
Oh, he just told me that my writing was incantational and, like, this is not, it's good in some parts, but it's not well written in some parts.
Mm.
So we have to match the book to the standard of the parts that are well written.
Okay.
I heard that feedback. It really crushed me. So I thought when they buy your novel, that's it. But they take you through this grueling editing process. So he told me that, Kobe, good books take time. So you have to sit on it. So what I did was I wrote a paragraph. I rewrote the entire thing. Even after I read last night, like, it gave me the encouragement that I needed, that if somebody could do this, I could also work my novel into a literary thing, because I love literary novels. And sometimes you write something and you think it's so good, and then other people read it and it's not actually really that good. So that was the, oh, it's not actually that good opinion that I needed to sit up and write again. Because first, I was not even taking my editing seriously. I was just like, yeah, he's white, what does he know about my book? And then I actually sat down and listened to him, and I took the paragraphs day by day. I rewrote the entire thing. I wrote a paragraph each day. I write in the morning, and then in the evening I come back and edit. So yeah, that was the entire thing. It was difficult. It took 3 years, and yeah, this now is where we are now. Yeah,
since the book has been out, because you are, I mean, I know you're not one to name yourself, but you're kind of like the Gordon Ramsay of Bookstagram in these parts, the global south. So did you
guys call me behind closed doors?
It's not behind closed doors. I'm saying it to your face. So what I have you been worried at all of what reviewers will say about your book, or even the authors that you entered that year? Have you been worried about what they think about your book?
Yeah. Then again, it's like every work of art, you get good reviews, you get bad reviews, and you have to deal with it. I'm answering this in a very diplomatic way, but like, all the people that I love and who recommend good books to me love No One Dies Here.
Okay.
And I was so nervous in the opening early weeks, like the first publication weeks, that they are going to hate it. And those are the people that I was most nervous for. Like when the book was coming out, and now that they actually really do like it, it's like I'm just like, oh, I really don't.
Everybody was
I don't.
Off.
Yeah, okay. Everybody that I respected has given me an opinion about it. So, and then it got that glowing review in the Guardian, and I was like, oh my God, then that's it. This is it. I've not heard opinions from. I've not heard bad reviews, which is like a great thing, because bad reviews don't follow authors. Authors go and find the bad reviews for themselves, and I'm not going to find a bad review for myself. I was one of those people who told people that I too deserve to become an author, because I too deserve to have my book hated. I felt like a lot of people are getting their books hated. Why? What's so special about that? I want to get my book hated too. So I did not really care about people hating it. As long as I love this book and I could like write it the way that I wanted to write it. What people say is not something that would bother me. And this is something that I would say to all writers. We should have thicker skin, because that's art.
Mm.
People are, not everybody is going to like it. Art is supposed to be critiqued and torn apart. You should actually just take your book and judge it for whether it's a good piece of art. And these opinions are subjective.
They're all subjective. True.
So you take, you listen to the critique and you take what, You just learn, I guess. You just learn and you move on with it. If you get bad critique, you move on. You get good critique,
it's not the end of the world.
Yeah. But a friend actually, which is something I don't do, somebody went on Goodreads and told me that, oh my God, Kobe, your book has never had a 2-star. This is my impression of a British accent, by the way. Oh my God, Kobe, your book has never had a 2-star or a 1-star review. It must be so good. And I'm like, girl, yeah, I've just been kind enough to get really positive things about Nodi. A 3-star review is good for me. A 4-star review is good for me. A 5-star review is amazing for me.
Okay.
But I just want people to read it and critique it. I've been a critic all my life, so I expect people to do the same thing for my book. I'm not running away from it.
Okay, that's fair. Before I drop down, find out, does anybody have, do you have any, have I, do you have any question? Kennedy, they said you had something, a special question you wanted to ask. What is this special question? Did he write it himself?
Okay, hi Kobe. Thank you for all the wonderful things you said about your book. I have a couple of questions, or one
Couple.
question,
Okay.
just one question in
All right.
particular. Your book has themes of, without giving a spoiler alert,
Yeah.
so your book has themes of friendship in it. Could you share with us how, what inspired some of those things we saw in the book regarding friendship, and how, amongst friendship amongst queer people, friendship between non-queer people, and all of that. How did that, what inspired you to write that, and how was it like writing it for you?
Do I answer that
Yeah.
now? On the theme of friendship, if you read No One Dies There, you see friendship is explored in a very unique way. I don't want to give the spoiler, but I mean, is this much?
It
It's
try, try.
a relationship between two online people, two bookstagrammers. And if you're a bookstagrammer here, you know how this feels. Like, you've never met someone in your life, but you have this, you love them. That's exactly what happened to I and Amin. We'd never met, and we're so good friends for a very long time. And then we met in person, and we didn't even realize that this was our first time meeting. So I wanted to explore that in, this book, how you can have such an intimate relationship that will go through so many issues than what a physical one would allow, one that allows for proximity would allow. But this is also a relationship that's so impactful in your life. Like all my online friends, I want to carry them and hug them. I send them all these di digital hug emojis, but they are not enough. So I just really wanted to explore that in this novel, how you can have somebody online, they are so close to you, might never meet them in your entire life,
True.
but they play an integral role in your life. And in other, I don't say this as a spoiler, but these are the people that encourage Kobe in real life. That is Kobe me to write my novel. And No One Dies There, all these online people are the people that encourage Kobe to write his novel too. So yeah.
Nice. How romantic. Does anybody else? Did I cover everything?
Yes, kind of, I think. I wanted to ask a question about skirting, not skirting the line. Because you're no longer a bookstagrammer now, you crossed over.
There.
So I was going to ask about the concerns, if it was something you're actively worried about when you were writing,
I'm
knowing
going
that,
forward.
yes, and knowing that, I used to do this for other people. If it was a worry at any time, because I know that there are a couple of bookstagrammers, or there will always be bookstagrammers that will cross that line from writing and reviewing books to writing them. So just wanted to see that perspective, because I always wonder what that is like, especially if it's something that I think might happen for me. So
Good. And it
yeah.
will happen if you want to. Like I tell everybody this, every bookstagrammer could be a writer if they want it, or only if they want it. Because you see the things out there. The only reason why I could write the way that I did is because I know what publishers are publishing even before other people are reading. That's a superpower. Like I know what book could be like the next big thing before everybody else starts reading it. So you could, all bookstagrammers could be writers if they want, if that's a dream they want for themselves. But yeah, it's like I think it's also a conversation that we should really have, because I was also hiding behind the scenes people would think that, oh, because you were right, and that's why you were saying you were putting so much shit on other people's book because you were so jealous about them. But no, there were so many other people's books that I loved, that I screamed about, and I shouted out about them. And I want to say that, how do I merge or make these like personalities interact with each other, bookstagrammer grammar and author? I think these days, after I had the big warning that Kobe, you should just learn to divorce your IG account from your author account, so that you don't have to have people linking you to these books, or even linking your personality, your fullness of your personality, to no one dies there. You just want to separate the two brands. I think that was the best advice I've had. And also on reviewing, I am these days not thinking of reviewing books anymore. I'm just thinking of focusing on the art side. If I really love a book, I'll think of interpreting it into an art form and just taking the picture and putting it on my IG. I'm not going to write words about it, or maybe if I write it, it will be read this or something. I'm just not going to review, but I'll make readers know through ads that I really love that book. So that's how I'm now navigating the bookstagram author.
That's fair. That's actually fair. I didn't think it would remain the same anyways. Give me a shade, by the way.
Yeah.
So since this is your debut effort, what do you think you do differently for your next project? Because I don't know if it's going to be like a novel, collection of stories, for the next work, or an album, or a documentary, who knows, YouTube channel, whatever.
A picture book would be ideal, right?
What do you think you do?
I think the different thing that I do now is to take my time and write, because now I've learned that good books take time. Mm. They really take time. We might think that, oh my God, yeah, every time we hear that, and all that takes 7 years, 19 years, 19 years. Good books take time. I cannot do that thing where...
Harper Lee took how many years after her last book, Opono? It did not bang. To Kill a Mockingbird, the book after To Kill a Mockingbird was like, 20-something years?
Go Set a Watchman.
Yeah, it didn't bang. It did not. Have you read it?
No, I've not read it.
So it's not about the years. Because she took quite a while. It almost felt as... I did not even know it was the same person who wrote the book. Same thing. I know you don't want to talk about people's books. I'm talking about it. Same thing with Nervous Conditions. Nervous Conditions and the remaining two books in the series. I love Nervous
Conditions.
I know she was at a different place in her life when she wrote the remaining two books. You know, Book of Knots and Moneyball.
Yeah.
But alas, it did not even look as if it was the same character that, you know. And Nervous Condition is such...
Nervous was such an integral
text. God damn it. That's an African really classic.
It's really good.
But like, if anybody was in a store now and I saw them about to pick the other two books, I'd be like, save your money. Wow. Read only Nervous Conditions and you're good to go. Because what... And then maybe a new short fiction, Black and African or something.
Black and female.
Black and female, yes. But like the remaining two books. I don't think it's about the amount of time you put. The only person I'm giving this concession for time is Jennifer Makumbi, because it's been a while since she dropped the first one. It's not been a while, it's just like 3 years. So I'm just
waiting. Well, it's also the fact that I use time in reference to the fact that I know my process, and I know if I rush things, it will just turn out botched and very not so nice. So I don't want to do, Nodi, the first one that came to you, I know you loved it, but it was also very patchy. There were some parts that were not well written. So I had to...
I like what I like.
Yeah, but I also had to sit down and write it into what this was. So I'm looking forward to just taking my time and writing my next novel. That's my thing now.
Okay. So for No One Dies Here, what do you hope readers take away from it? If there's one thing...
To realize that it's not just a Ghanaian book, especially the themes are so universal, and the fact that I represent Lagos in it and what Lagos is and its classist.
You did that Lagos part, you wrote it. It was very, when I was reading that part, it was very reminded me of how Elif Shafak wrote about Istanbul in Bastard. That was you did that well.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you did it very well. And I should give you your props for that.
I that's the thing. I want people to know that No One Dies Here is just not. Kenyans have read it and they're like, oh my god, like this is a book that relates to us. Even the themes of new colonialism. Mm. I cannot bring those things up because spoilers, right?
Yeah.
I think that it's one of those novels that people would realize that this is it. It's a book that talks about all Africa and it pushes the rights of Africans more than, you know, other things. So I want people to take that away from this novel. You can be anyone, you can be anything and still have something about No One Dies Yet that you relate to, like the way some of the white people in Accra read No One Dies Yet and send me these long messages that, oh my god, Kobe, you got it, like this feels like Accra, the way white people act in Accra, you've exactly depicted it, like I know my people, that's what they keep saying.
I was about to say, oh dear, that's comfortable.
So yeah, I want people to know that it's not just a small Ghana. It was about Ghana during the year of return, the most tourism booming year of Ghana's history.
I'm jealous that you guys have.
Yes,
that.
So yeah, it's not just a Ghanaian novel. Yes.
Okay. So what next for Kobe?
What next? The next thing for Kobe is to relax and enjoy the fruits of his labor.
Okay.
Two Panic Attacks to write this novel. I think it's now
time. I feel like if I do the playback of this episode, you've mentioned Panic Attacks like at least four times. Go on.
Yeah, I just realized that writing is so hard.
Mm.
And to do it well, you have to, it takes a lot of time. And to have done it well like this, it took so much effort from me that I want to relax. I don't want to jump into a second novel so soon. But there's so many exciting projects for No One Dies Yet that you would one day have to invite me on this podcast again to talk about. How did this happen? Oh my God. We're keeping this a secret from you. But yeah, I'm excited for the future of No One Dies Yet. It's my baby, but it's doing so many things that I didn't think it would do. And that's what babies do. They do their own thing and they become queer and you don't expect them to be like that. But they do their own thing.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, look at that.
Something I often think about when authors write, because you say that some of the characters remind you of people that you know.
Mm.
Has anybody in your life recognized themselves, like in a character or in the mannerism of a character or something, like in the book? Or do they think you're writing about them and they brought it up with you?
Thank you so much for that question. Yeah, I feel like a lot of the times people text me, yeah, like Kobe, you this paragraph, this scene, it's me, right? Is this a story that I shared to you? Like, have you tweaked it in a way just so that I will not be able to know that it's mine? But I know it's mine. Like, you've written about me, yeah. And I'll be like, no, it's not you, because all these characters are an amalgamation of people. They are not just one character. Like, no one is actually. You are not just one character. I mean, you are not just one character. You are an amalgamation of people. That's what we are. Really, we are not. Like, I can wake up one time and be another character. I mean, the integral part is that I'll still be Amin, but I would have things about Kobe too. That's why we meet people and we either really connect with them based on shared interests. Like, yeah, we see them and we feel like this is me. This is my person. This person was created for me. And they also have parts of them that are so different from us. So all of us are amalgamations, and that's the beauty of life. Like, I would want people to read No One Dies Yet and see themselves in. That's actually the best compliment anybody could give me. Like, oh my god, Kobe, you've written about me. Why did you do this? I'm like, it means that they see themselves in a character that is not wholly them. Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
So there's no one
you're
afraid to see themselves.
Well, you see my face. I'm glad this face can't come in a podcast. But yeah, there are people that I'm afraid of, but thank God they are not readers. I'm never going to find out that I wrote about them like that. Yeah.
Well played. Okay. Okay, that's fair. Yeah, that concludes concludes the book chat. I feel like I've covered everything I wanted to cover without spoilers. We might have to do another one, like maybe next year, like a full, like a kind of book club type where we break down
things. Thanks. When it comes
giving people enough time, especially when the audiobook comes out, because I'm really looking forward to the audiobook version of this book. Yeah. The synopsis, like here or like in the I can read the synopsis. So Neye, who I have had on the podcast, just asked me to read the synopsis of No One Dies Yet by Kobe Benben. Am I pronouncing your last name well?
That's perfect.
Even though you did not pronounce my last name right. I'm still taking a pee because All right. A genre-breaking novel from a powerful new African voice. 2019, the year of return. It has been exactly 400 years since the first slave ships left Ghana for America. Ghana has now opened its doors to black diasporans, encouraging them to return and get to know the land of their ancestors. Elton, Vincent, and Scott arrive from America to visit preserved sites from the transatlantic slave route and to explore the country's underground queer scene. Their activities are narrated by their two combative guides, Kobe, their way into Accra's privileged circles, and Nana, the voice of tradition and religious principle. The pair's tense relationship sets the tone for what becomes a shocking and unsettling tale of murder that is at times funny, at times erotic, yet always outspoken and iconoclastic. God damn it, there are a lot of big words.
That's not iconoclastic is not my, it's my editor.
Yeah, but that is No One Dies Yet by Kobe Benben. Yay.
Thank you, Akili. I mean, so much for having me. This being a brilliant conversation.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you for agreeing to come on the podcast. I've been saying I was going to have you on the podcast since, but he was so dramatic about being on this podcast, thinking we were just going to have a drinks filled. Even if I was the only one drinking on this episode, I had a great time. I don't know about you, but I had a great time.
But I don't drink. You don't, like, if you have digestive issues, I don't drink anymore.
Just going through life sober. I do feel for you, though. But yeah.
I have things that help me get through life.
It's not the same. But yeah, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, and thank you to everyone who embraced the stress of this Lagos to join us. We have Lola and we have Neye and we have Kene on this live recording of the Something Bookish podcast. They're a live audience. So yeah.
That's it, y'all. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I would love to read or hear any comments or feedback you have, and you can do that by sending me a message on Twitter or Instagram at Lipgloss Mafia. That's LipglossMafia. Subscribe now or follow so you don't miss out on the next episode, which is available on Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, and other streaming platforms. If you enjoyed this podcast, kindly spread the book love by spreading the word. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, rate and leave a review. It really helps new listeners find the show. And you know shares and reviews are my love language. Yay! Thanks in advance. I appreciate it and I appreciate you for listening. Readers, that's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. And like Jim Rohn said, reading is essential for those who seek to rise above the ordinary. Happy reading, everyone. Bye.